I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's April 30th, and we have a lot to talk about. As people age, their immune system changes. Their level of physical and cognitive reserve changes. They often develop additional health issues. They frequently experience changes in their mobility. And these are people who aren't living with MS. When you combine the health issues related to aging with the health issues that are related to MS, you end up with a sum that is exponentially larger than its parts. And when you consider that there are more people living with MS who are over the age of 65 than there are people living with MS under the age of 45, it's not surprising that the subject of aging with MS has become an area of keen interest among researchers and clinicians. That's why last week in Philadelphia, the International Advisory Committee for Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis invited a select group of 100 MS researchers and clinical specialists from around the world to participate in a three-day deep dive exploring aging and MS. In part one of our coverage, we're taking you inside this meeting, where you'll hear from some of the expert presenters who were in attendance. As the meeting was getting underway, I spoke with Dr. Tim Cutsey, the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer, and a member of this meeting's Scientific Planning Committee. Tim shared some of the specific issues the meeting presenters and attendees would be focusing on over the next 3 days. We're at the Aging and MS Workshop that's being hosted by the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS. And I'm here with Dr. Tim Cutsey, the Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer at the National MS Society and a member of the Meeting Planning Committee. Welcome back to the podcast, Tim.
Great to be with you, John.
Dr. Aaron Miller opened the meeting this morning by reminding the attendees that there are more people with MS over the age of 65 than there are under the age of 45. I found that to be truly remarkable.
Absolutely. When Aaron shared that information, John, a couple thoughts came to mind around what that means. First of all, to me, that represents one of the really fundamental aspects of how we are changing the journey with MS, in that people are living longer and longer with MS. Back in the 2000s, we didn't talk about getting old with MS and aging with MS. You know, we were very focused on the science and what we need to do to stop the disease today. But it's become clearer and clearer that people live decades and that, you know, having disease-modifying treatments, quick diagnosis, and seeing a doctor all can change that trajectory. And what you're sharing is that changed trajectory of the disease, that people can live confidently and powerfully and you know, manage their MS as well.
What do you see as some of the challenges that people with MS face as they age?
So that's a really critical aspect. So one thing to consider is that as we're learning, as we get older, our body, you know, doesn't respond as quickly to cuts, bruises, things like that. You know, when you're young, you bounce back quickly. When you're older, you don't bounce back quickly. But if you combine that then with a disease like MS, where the nervous system is being affected, you have both the aging process happening in a person's brain and their MS happening in the brain. And sometimes that can be hard to figure out. Is a person walking a little slower because they're older? Or are they walking a little slower because of their MS? Or is it a combination of both? And so that's one of the challenges for neurologists to tease out is, you know, what is it that's happening in front of the patient with them? And then how can they tackle the, you know, address the issue? Is it an aging issue or an MS issue? The other question it raises is, how to treat MS and how should the treatment of MS evolve over time? And today, you know, the disease modifying treatments, you know, are really good at stopping relapses, which is a really important aspect of the disease. But do we need to do that indefinitely? Does a person need to be on a treatment indefinitely, or do we reach a point where the immune system has evolved such that those treatments are no longer needed? Those are some of the questions we have to address. Another question we're trying to get at is, does the biology of MS change over time so that it's, you know, showing up biologically you know, to be at the onset of the disease, but perhaps looks different at 60 and 70. We don't know the answer to those questions. And that's why we brought leaders together to try to tease out what's the biology, what's changing. And the last piece I'll say is the other aspect, which is we're starting to diagnose MS at later ages as well. And we need to figure out, you know, is diagnosing MS the same thing for someone in their 60s versus diagnosing MS for someone in their 30s? And those are really big open questions that we're trying to get to.
So you may have already started answering my next question, but I was going to ask you, what are the goals of this workshop?
First of all, we saw that aging with MS is a big issue. And so we wanted to try to bring together leaders to say, what do we know about MS as people age? What does the biology of MS look like? How does it appear clinically? We wanted to have a conversation around treating MS in older age and what may need to change. And so our goal was to study the science, bring a group together to understand the biology, the clinical aspects of it, but then importantly, identify the gaps that exist in both knowledge and research so that we can then focus our efforts as MS organizations on what we need to do to fill those gaps, both to get better ways of treating MS in older age, but importantly also what are ways that we can change our support for people with MS as they age so that we're also able to come in at the right place and time for a person with their MS journey.
Speaking of those knowledge gaps, over the past few years, we've seen efforts focused on making clinical trials more inclusive. Do we need to rethink age criteria when it comes to clinical trial participation?
Absolutely. And that's one of the aspects of this conference. You know, this is convened by the International Advisory on Clinical Trials in MS. So we think about clinical trials a lot. And there is a lot of, I think, interest in understanding, you know, what are the upper and lower limits of somebody participating in a clinical trial in terms of age. So in most clinical trials, unless they happen to be for pediatric MS, are over the age of 18. But the upper limit, whether it should be 55, 65, 75, is something that continues to be difficult to tease out. And we also want to be inclusive in the sense of people who want to be part of a clinical trial should be able to be part of it. Those are some of the conversations that are happening here. And our hope is that if we can get to consensus, we can also present that to our regulators to inform their thinking.
How do you see the National MS Society responding to the shift in age of the MS population?
So that is a really important facet that we would consider within the context of our Pathways to Cures roadmap. So for your audience, I'm sure many of them know, we published the Pathways to MS Cures Global Roadmap, which contemplates focusing research in areas of stopping progression, restoring function, and ending MS forever. And within those three pillars, there are opportunities for us to begin to also think about aging with MS in terms of what we drive. So to give you an example, when we think about stopping progression, you know, we would begin to think about the science of, is progression different at a younger age versus an older age? What does it take to measure progression at a younger age and an older age, and can you intervene in that? In the restore area, one of the things we know is that if people are going to live, as we know, decades with MS, there are things actually individuals can start doing early on that can really set them up for success later in life. Doing things like having rehabilitation therapy, physical function therapy, and those kinds of rehabilitative interventions that if you know you're missing a step today but can take on some exercise therapy to strengthen yourself for the future, then that actually pays into a future almost retirement account about living stronger and well with MS. And so that would be under the restore portfolio. With the end part of the disease, that's really just, again, stopping the disease from forever happening. So that's earlier in the disease journey. But, you know, Pathways to Cures will be driving our agenda, and aging will be one of those dimensions.
Well, Dr. Tim Cutsey, I want to thank you for your tireless efforts to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
John, it's a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Dr. Jennifer Graves from the University of California, San Diego, was the first speaker of the day. And I had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Graves about the difference between chronological aging and biological aging, and how that difference impacts multiple sclerosis.
Dr.
Dr. Jennifer Graves is an associate professor in the Department of Neurosciences at UC San Diego School of Medicine, as well as the director of the UC San Diego Neuroimmunology Research Program. Dr. Graves also has a special interest in studying how age affects patients' experience in multiple sclerosis. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Graves.
Thank you.
Can you explain the difference between biological aging and chronological aging?
Excellent question. So the idea is there is a difference between your rate of physical aging and the number of birthdays you've happened to celebrate. And we know that for any one individual, say they're 35 years old by their birth date, could actually have a biological age between 25 and 60 years old. The things that drive this difference could be their genetics. We know there are those families that age very well. Also lifestyle factors as well as medical conditions.
You were the very first presenter this morning, and in your presentation, you said that the older you are at the onset of MS, the shorter the time to disability. Do we know why?
So we posit that this is related to these aging processes, that having an older immune system, having an older central nervous system may be contributing to this.
In your presentation, I heard you say that slowing that biological aging process can slow MS disease progression. Can you talk about that?
Well, I would say that's more of a hypothesis. I haven't proven it yet, but I'm trying to inspire our research community and our drug developers to consider this. Because we know age is the strongest factor associated with having disability, it hasn't yet been targeted with therapeutics. But I'm hypothesizing that if we start targeting aging processes, maybe we will get a high efficacy drug for progressive MS.
Speaking of which, I heard you make the statement, and perhaps also hypothesize, that progressive MS is a function of age. I'm hoping you can explain that a little bit to our listeners.
Well, all of us undergo aging processes in all the organ systems in our body. But in specific, our immune system changes somewhere in the 50s and 60s for most individuals. This can differ by anyone's biological age. And some of the changes that happen is we have less overall robust responses. This is why you see people starting to get more vaccines as they get older, because they need more of a boost to their immune system to fight infections. But the immune system is not inactive in older individuals, and in fact tends to go into a state of chronic inflammation. And these features of the aging immune system match fairly well with what we see in progressive disease, which is less large relapse events, but more chronic, slow development of disability. So part of our job as researchers in the field is to prove this connection and try to prove that we could target it.
Does MS accelerate biological aging in an individual?
So in several of our biological aging markers that we've studied, we have seen evidence of this. We've seen slightly older biological ages in people living with MS compared to controls, and the overall inflammatory burden of this disease and the burden of oxidative stress from this disease is plausible as being able to cause accelerated aging, which makes it even more important that we target aging in the MS population.
MS affects women almost three times more than men. And in your research, you've explored how ovarian aging might impact MS disability. What did you learn in that research?
So we had hypothesized that the mean age of progressive MS is 45, which is in the middle of a period of ovarian aging in women. We also know that women catch up to men in terms of disability by the age of 50. So by looking at this anti-Müllerian hormone, we were able to age the ovaries in these women and their reproductive function. And we found that independent of their birth date, independent of somatic age, we were able to see an association with accumulating disability with this decline in production of hormones from the ovaries. So we do think that going through perimenopause could be a risk, at least in some women, of developing the secondary progressive form.
Well, Dr. Jennifer Graves, I want to thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
All right. Thank you.
Most people are diagnosed with MS between the ages of 20 and 40. When people over the age of 50 are diagnosed with MS, it's referred to as late-onset MS. Later on day one of the workshop, Dr. Wallace Brownlee, a neurologist and clinical lead for the Multiple Sclerosis Service at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery in London, gave a presentation on differential diagnosis in late-onset MS. After his presentation, I talked with Dr. Brown-Lee about some of the challenges in diagnosing and treating late-onset MS. Dr. Wallace Brown-Lee is a neurologist and clinical lead for the Multiple Sclerosis Service at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery in London, and an honorary associate professor at University College London Institute of Neurology. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Brown-Lee.
Thank you for having me, John.
Your presentation was on differential diagnosis of very late onset MS. So, wondering, do people diagnosed with late onset MS present with different symptoms than younger people who are diagnosed with MS?
So that's a great question. And what we know is that when MS comes on later in life, which for our purposes means over the age of 50, which isn't that late, but for being diagnosed with MS, it certainly is, the MS can present in a slightly different way. What we see is a greater proportion of people having progressive MS symptoms from the outset. And while relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis is still more common after the age of 50, the proportion of people with progressive disease is higher. We also see more people presenting with motor symptoms or ambulatory dysfunction. And we tend to see that people recover less well from relapses. So they often have a higher level of disability when we first meet them.
As people with MS age, it's more likely that they'll develop other health conditions, which are called comorbidities. What are some of the common comorbidities that someone aging with MS is likely to develop?
So the comorbidities that we see commonly in people with multiple sclerosis are similar to the ones that we see in the rest of the population. So vascular risk factors are really important. Things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, issues related to mental health like depression and anxiety, musculoskeletal problems like arthritis. And all of these can complicate the diagnosis of MS or develop over the course of the illness and influence the rate of progression.
I think you started to answer my very next question. I was wondering how these comorbidities impact both diagnosing and treating late onset MS.
Sure. Well, if people have comorbidities, it can make it more difficult to establish a diagnosis of MS. And often people with comorbidities face delays in having a diagnosis, which means that there's delays in those people being able to access treatments to keep them well. In terms of progression of MS over time, people living with comorbidities do face a greater risk of MS progression. And as neurologists, it's really important that we take a holistic view of our patients. And we're not there just to treat the MS and offer disease-modifying therapies, but we need to really focus on wider brain health, managing comorbidities like high blood pressure or diabetes, and keeping our patients well with exercise and lifestyle change.
Speaking of disease-modifying therapies, do people diagnosed with late-onset MS respond to DMTs in a similar manner than the rest of the MS population does?
So that's an important issue and one that we don't have enough data on. Most of the trials exclude people over the age of 55. And so the drugs that come to market for MS haven't often been tested in older patient populations. Some data certainly suggests that the response to treatment is different in older people with multiple sclerosis, and they may respond less well to medication, indicating that they're more likely to progress over time. In my own practice, I'd certainly take age into consideration when I'm thinking and talking to patients about disease-modifying therapies, but age itself isn't the most important thing that influences treatment decisions. The activity of that person's MS, for example, relapses, change on MRI, their other health conditions, the other medications they take, have a much greater impact on treatment decisions than a person's age per se.
That's interesting. There's been a lot of conversation focused on the idea of whether someone over the age of, say, 55 should continue to be on a disease-modifying therapy. But I think you raise a lot of good points that it's not always about the disease-modifying therapy or their MS. It's about that more holistic view of who they are and where they are in their health status.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of uncertainty about when we should consider stopping disease-modifying therapy, discontinuing treatment. And I don't think that's something that should be tied up completely with age, and it's something that needs to be discussed within a shared decision-making model between a neurologist or the healthcare provider and the person with MS to come to a decision and a treatment plan that's best for them.
In light of not only what you and I are talking about, but what we're hearing in multiple presentations today, and I assume what we'll hear over the next couple of days, the problem continues to pop up that, gee, there isn't enough data about how people who are aging with MS might react to a DMT or other sort of treatment options. Do you think we need to be revisiting the age criteria for clinical trial research as not only the MS population, but the entire population ages?
Absolutely. So I don't think it's fair that we can draw a line in the sand and say 55 is old and you shouldn't be part of a clinical trial. And maybe that's because I'm a little way off 55. I've got a few more years to go. But I think that the general population is not aging in the way it was, and 55 is no longer considered old. I think, though, also, it's not just about clinical trials, because every day in the clinic, we're treating and discussing medications with people over the age of 55. And we've got a tremendous opportunity to gather that information, to generate real-world evidence, to understand both the safety and the effectiveness of the medications in older populations.
Well, Dr. Wallace Brownlee, I want to thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people who are living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, John. It's been great.
Dr. Amit Bar-Or is the director of the Center for Neuroinflammation and Neurotherapeutics and the chief of the Multiple Sclerosis Division at Penn Medicine. And Dr. Bar-Or's presentation focused on how the immune system changes as we age and how those changes can have an impact on MS. I asked Dr. Bar-Or to explain some of those changes in the aging immune system. Dr. Amit Bar-Or is the director of the Center for Neuroinflammation and Neurotherapeutics, the chief of the Multiple Sclerosis Division, and the Melissa and Paul Anderson President's Distinguished Professor at Penn Medicine. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Bar-Or.
Thanks for having me, John. Pleasure to be back.
In your presentation this afternoon, you talked about immune senescence and inflammaging. Could you explain what those two terms refer to?
Certainly. So as people get less young, our immune systems get less young. They age. And there are certain processes that we see as part of normal aging. Everybody experiences them. Certain aspects of a person's immune system gets a little less able to respond to infections and protect us from cancers. This is the main reason why people who are elderly are at greater risk for things like infections, potential cancers, lesser responses to vaccines, and so on. And that normal process is called immune senescence, just aging or getting older at the level of the immune cells. Inflammaging is another process that also occurs with aging. And here, rather than losing capacity, certain aspects of the immune system end up being more pro-inflammatory. It's a low-level percolating inflammation, which seems to be very relevant for a number of age-related pathologies, and particularly, for instance, vascular disease and atherosclerosis. So we now understand that clogging of the vessels, atherosclerosis, is not only because there's, let's say, too much cholesterol, which of course is still very relevant, but also because there's irritation of the blood vessel walls and an inflammatory response that contributes to the clogging and interacts with the high cholesterol to create the problem. So that is an aspect of an immune response which increases with age and is associated with bad things as opposed to good things.
I know when people who are living with MS hear the term inflammatory response, they get a little nervous. Does this inflammaging alter MS or affect MS in any way?
That's a great question, and we're learning about that. I think first, just to make the point that inflammation is not a bad thing. We all need to mount inflammatory responses every moment of every day. The immune system, the normal immune system, has multiple different roles. The obvious ones are, again, protecting us from infection, protecting us from cancers. But the immune system responds to every injury and contributes to repair. If you don't have a good immune system, you fail to repair from any type of injury. The immune system is also involved in what we call homeostasis. It surveys tissues and helps maintain the normal function of tissue. So all of these are a form of an immune response, and inflammation is simply a term for an immune response, a very general term. Inflammation, depending on the context, can be a good thing or a bad thing. And obviously, individuals who have MS, one aspect is that they have immune responses that are attacking their central nervous system. We call that bad inflammation, but there's also good inflammation. So not everything that is inflammation is bad. How inflammaging interacts with multiple sclerosis is a big question. We expect that the inflammaging is not a good thing for MS and may be particularly relevant for the progressive aspects of MS.
Do people living with MS immune age differently?
Also a great question, and there have been several studies done, including by our group. So first of all, most of the age-related changes in the immune system seem to play out in individuals living with MS no differently than individuals who do not have MS. But there are some differences in the trajectories, and when I say trajectory, I'm talking about how, let's say, a certain immune cell subset increases in numbers or in activity over time or decreases. You can kind of map out that trajectory and compare the trajectory of particular responses between individuals living with MS and, for instance, healthy age matched controls. And while most of those trajectories are very similar, there are some that differ, and those may in fact be more relevant for progressive aspects of MS as opposed to relapsing aspects of MS.
And finally, I want to circle back to that immune senescence that I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation. Does that have an impact on MS disease-modifying therapies?
Well, it may well. So the observation that people who have MS immune senesce just like everybody else, meaning their immune system is a little less capable over time, the good news there is that that immune senescence is almost certainly the main reason why people have less and less relapsing MS activity as they get less young, right? So relapsing activity is an activation of immune cells outside of the central nervous system, then they traffic to and cause inflammation around vessels. And that requires a relatively strong response of a person's immune system. And if that response tends to decrease with age as part of immune senescence, this is a likely explanation that people have less and less of that aspect of MS as time goes on.
Well, Dr. Amit Bar-Or, I want to thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people who are living with MS, and thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, John. All the best.
Day one of the Aging and MS workshop concluded with a review of results from a survey that showed what neurologists thought they needed to better treat their older patients who were living with MS. Next week, in part two of our coverage of this important meeting, we'll get into those survey results and talk to the two neurologists who developed the survey on behalf of the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers. We'll also talk with some of the other presenters, and we'll talk about the next steps that were announced at the conclusion of the meeting. But that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/348. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.